The answer past, penetrating and perfect truth, is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it, we can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. Nice to see everybody. Great. There's something that a phrase we often use, that great Master Dogen wrote in the Gapidoyo Jinshu. One must turn the stream of compassion within. And I always thought, what does this mean? Turning the stream of compassion within. I just didn't get it. You know, it's one of those things that they say, and this kind of goes right by, and that sort of. And I've been thinking, you know, for some little time about this, turning the stream of compassion within. Compassion is often linked to, you know, likened to water, the stream of compassion, the water of compassion, because it has many attributes in common with water. And Avalokiteshvara, as you see all around, Bodhisattva of compassion, often she's got a vase, and she's pouring the water of compassion upon all beings, all things, everything, all over the whole world. It's actually quite a small vase. You'd think she'd need a water truck, but she has this little vase. And she doesn't worry, because she knows it's just going to keep coming. It's not just one little vase full, you know. It's just endless. It keeps on coming. It just pours and pours and pours out of this little vase. Because it comes through Avalokiteshvara, it comes through her, it comes through us, pouring out to ourselves and all beings, pouring the water of compassion. It just has no limits, it just keeps coming, it's unending. We cannot stop it. We can divert it a bit, we can do, you know, mess it up a little bit, but actually, when it comes down to it, it's just going to keep pouring on everybody, everything, all places, and we cannot prevent that. It's not her water. It's not our water. The water of compassion. It comes through her. It comes through us. Through our practice. Our kindness. Our keeping to the precepts. Our doing our best. Our allowing it to come through. And it helps us and helps other beings. We allow the water to come through us by sitting still. Just by sitting still and letting it come through, not blocking it up. Water flows everywhere. It doesn't discriminate. It doesn't say, well, I think I like this bit over here, but not that there. Essentially, it flows downwards. And it sucks into some things and not others. But it's not a discriminating, I like this, I don't like that kind of a thing. It just flows and trickles into all the little cracks. It's formless. It adapts itself to circumstances, like compassion. If it's frozen, it gets stuck in a certain shape, but then it can melt and flow everywhere and do its work. It seeps into the dry places where it's needed and gives life. You know? It softens the hard edges of things. When we soak our hard edges in water, they soften. It melts things and lets them blend together, not keeping everything separate, but everything can blend and melt together with kindness and compassion. Flowing everywhere, no discrimination, no judgment. Compassion doesn't say, this person deserves compassion and that person doesn't. You know, these people are worthy, these people are not worthy. We won't give them any compassion, we keep it to ourselves. It's not like that at all. It goes to everybody. Avalokiteshvara doesn't just keep her vase for the good people, keep it away from the bad people, you know. Of course, we always think we're the bad people, and it's not for us. Compassion is for everybody, even us. The thousand eyes to see where help is needed, the thousand hands to help, as part of the compassion. There's a lovely book called Bodhisattva of Compassion by John Blofeld, which many of us have read. It's full of stories about Avalokiteshvara, compassionate Bodhisattva, people praying to her and she appears to them or helps them or something, you know, changes for them. And there's one story where there's this, I think it's a government official, but there's a little boy. He's deeply devoted to Avalokiteshvara, prays to her all the time, recites her mantra and so forth, because his mother is also very devout and is deeply devoted to Avalokiteshvara. And he grows up, and his mother has a really difficult time because his father turns away from his mother in favor of a young concubine, and his mother is heartbroken, grief-stricken, and dies. And so the fellow in the story takes against Avalokiteshvara and is really, you know, says, how could you let this happen to my mom? She's been devoted to you all her life, you know, and this happens to her. And the young woman, the concubine, turns out to be really unkind and mean. And he develops a deep hatred of this young woman. And he has an opportunity to murder her. And suddenly, murderous rage arises in his heart. He has this perfect opportunity. Nobody will see, you know, nobody will know. He can blame it on somebody else. And right at that very moment, she sees his intention, and she looks at him, and she calls on Avalokiteshvara, this young woman who's done all these awful things, made his life a misery, caused the death of his mother through grief. This young woman, quite with complete confidence, calls on Avalokiteshvara. And he's just getting ready to, you know, kill her. And he can't move. His arms are kind of bound to his sides. He can't do anything. He can just stand there. He can't even say anything. And she sees what's happened. And she just looks at him and then walks away. And he was completely dumbfounded. He said, how could this young person who's just awful call on Avalokiteshvara with such confidence? And Avalokiteshvara shows up right away, doesn't say, oh, she's a bad person, you know. But from then on, he was deeply grateful to Kansiyan, Avalokiteshvara, because he didn't kill this person. She saved him from murdering somebody by binding his arms to his sides. He couldn't do it. Furthermore, the young woman becomes nice. She changes. She becomes kind and helpful. Changes completely. And I love this story because Avalokiteshvara didn't judge. She just gave help where help was needed. A being is about to be killed, save that being. And thereby transforms that being and prevents this other person from doing a horrible act. So I think it's a lovely story because there's no judgment there. It's just compassion, which turns the heart around of both these people. Really a beautiful story. No judgment. No judgment at all. Because compassion and judgment don't mix. They're like oil and water. You can't have them in the same space somehow. Where you're judging, compassion is cut off. It's just for this person, it's not for that person. It's for this situation, not that situation. And usually, it's not for me. It's for somebody else, but I'm not. I don't deserve compassion somehow. It's for other people. And this, of course, isn't real compassion. When it's cut up like that, it's got to be for everybody. In the place of stillness, where deep compassion is there, judgment has no meaning. When you're still and compassion arises, there can be no judgment. No matter what, no judgment. Because if we could see completely, we could not judge. It just makes no sense to judge, to make a judgment, to be critical when there's compassion there. Turning the stream of compassion. This is a deliberate thing, a deliberate act, to turn the stream of compassion. To know that we actually have access to it, to turn the stream of compassion within, means that we know we can get at it. We can find it and do something with it, to open ourselves up to it. And again, some of us might feel, well, I'm not a very compassionate person. I don't know where to find it. I don't know how to be kind. I don't know how to be compassionate. But actually, all of us can practice kindness. Any of us can just do little acts of kindness. That's compassion. And it helps to open us to that. It's the judgment. It's the judgment that seems to get in the way. Thinking, I can't do this. I don't have this. Kanzen won't want me, you know. Somehow I'm outside that. But we can actually practice kindness, and that helps us to open the door to compassion, to come through us, to us, not just for everybody else, it's for us too. And we can see where we're making judgments about ourselves or other people, and just try to relinquish our grip. You know, just to let it go a little bit. Turning the stream of compassion within. The hard part is to do this for ourselves. It seems easier somehow, sometimes, to be compassionate to other people. Some other people. Maybe not all other people. You know, some other people. Well, we'll start with them. And then general, more general. But compassion for ourselves can be the hardest thing. To see our own harsh judgments of ourselves. And again, just to relinquish the grip. We don't have to reason ourselves out of it. We don't have to fix it. Just to relinquish the grip a little bit. To soften. To let that water soften things. Sometimes we don't even know that we're judging ourselves. We think we're the way we think we are. You see what I mean? And in fact, it's just a habit of mind from maybe lifetimes of thinking we're a certain way, thinking, you know, I'm not a kind person, or I'm not a worthy person, or the Buddha won't want me, or I just can't do it, or whatever it might be. Lifetimes of habit, thinking we're a certain way, or that we should be a certain way, we should be something different. Judging ourselves and falling short. Ideals. I should be better than this. I should be different from this. I should be smarter. I should be better at this. I should be more successful. I should be kinder. I should be wiser. I should be nicer. I should be more enlightened. I should be more still. I should be more everything. And ideals seem like a good thing, but actually, I think it sometimes do more harm than good. It's something to live up to. It helps us in certain ways. But it can be a horrible bondage. I should be different. I shouldn't be this way. I should be some other way. And I'm just not cutting it. Because here's me over here. And there's the ideal up there. And there's this huge gap. Ideals can be like a kind of a club to beat ourselves with, to try and make ourselves better. Does not work. Or beating others. They should be better. You know. Turning the stream of compassion within. To put an end to our ideals. You know. Yes, we try to keep to the precepts. Yes, we wish to do our best. We wish to be kind. We wish to practice, you know, stillness and all that. But there's a kind of a hardness about an ideal, you know. Something to live up to that I'm never going to quite make, trying to be something we're not, or trying to make other people into something they're not. So how do we turn this stream of compassion within to help ourselves? Well, first, by sitting still, first and foremost, as best we can. Sometimes just physically, this sitting down and taking a breath. Excuse me. When there's turmoil or distress, suffering, to do our best just to sit still right in the middle of it, no matter how you feel. Here it is. This is how it is right now. This is what I've got. Right now, it's like this. It's not like that nice thing over there. It's like this. You know. This is what I have to deal with. Just to look at it and sit still in the middle of it. To recognize our mistakes. Take responsibility. Not beating ourselves over the head, but just looking at them. Okay, I made a mistake. I can learn something. I'm sorry. Accepting the consequences of what we have done, of our mistake, and just bearing it without complaint. To just see, that's why this is happening. It's because of that. Or even if we don't see, just to accept what comes to us as best we can and not kick against it. Acceptance, the key that unlocks the gateless gate. To accept ourselves completely would be quite something. To completely accept the way we are, the things we've done, the situation we're in, the mistakes we've made, the choices we've made in the past, our shortcomings, our faults, the things we don't like about ourselves or about our life. To accept all of that completely would indeed be to turn the stream of compassion within. And it's really hard to do that. But we can see where we resist or see where we judge and relinquish. Just for a moment, to relinquish that grip. Oh, look what I'm doing. Just relinquish for a moment. You know? Over and over again. To let all these judgments and criticisms and mistakes and all that, just let them soften and melt in that water of compassion. So we don't keep hurting ourselves and other people with the sharp edges of these things, but just let them all soften and melt. Everything can be accepted. Doesn't mean we don't try and do anything or we don't try and change anything, but to accept it first and foremost, then see where we go. Again, relinquishing judgment. Things should be some other way, I should be some other way, I'm not good enough, I will never be good enough. We never will be good enough. It's bottomless. We can work ourselves to death. We can sacrifice ourselves to the max. It'll never be enough. Because that's not the answer. Doing, trying to fill that gap, that seeming gap between what we are, we think we are, and what we think we ought to be. You know, we can work ourselves completely to death. And it won't be enough. So there's another way. To relinquish the judging. I should be some other way. To come to peace with ourselves. Easier said than done. But just by sitting still, right in the middle of whatever it is that causes us suffering, right in the middle of it, and relinquish that judging mind. Now this quote that I started with, one must turn the stream of compassion within. There's more to it. Let's just read it. One must turn the stream of compassion within and give up both knowledge and its recognition. Giving up knowledge and its recognition. Why is this part of turning the stream of compassion within? You know, knowledge is a good and necessary thing. What Dogen is pointing to is relying upon the intellect, having knowledge and being recognized as having knowledge. You know, this isn't the same as wisdom. Knowledge is okay, it's helpful, but it's not wisdom. It can lead to wisdom, it can help. But wisdom is non-judging, non-discriminating, not this works and that doesn't, this is right, that's wrong, this person's good, that person's bad, this is doing the person's doing the right thing, that person's doing the wrong thing, you know. That's knowledge, but it's not the same as wisdom. And with knowledge, we can think our view is the correct view, but it's just another view. Views are just views, opinions are just opinions. They are not the same as that wisdom of the heart to which we aspire, the true wisdom, which is one with compassion. Compassion goes deeper than all views, all knowledge. In the place of compassion, none of that matters. It's just compassion. Compassion and wisdom work together, the twin pillars of Buddhism. You can't have one without the other. When we see with wisdom, compassion is there. It has to be. You can't see truly if there is not an eye of compassion there. And when we see with compassion, wisdom is there. They're both, it's like seeing with the two eyes. That's when you get the perspective. And it's beyond all views and beyond all knowledge, way beyond those things, deeper than all of those things, to entrust ourselves to deep compassion and true wisdom. We do have that within ourselves. It's not for other people, it's for us. Well, it is for other people, and it's for us. It's not just for somebody else who's wiser and kinder and better than me. You know, that's all very well for other people, but I don't, you know. It's for us. It's for all of us. The water of compassion is poured out upon all of us. And we can allow it to pour through us, over us, through us, through all beings. We can turn that stream of compassion within to pour through us, around us, through all beings, around all things, everywhere. To pour through us and help us to open up, to soften those hard edges, to forgive ourselves for our mistakes and our shortcomings. None of us is perfect, and we're all trying to do our very best. Simultaneously, we make mistakes, we mess up, and we're trying to do our best. To see that pure aspiration, that pure intention, and not just the mistakes. To see the mistakes and learn from them, but not only to see them, you know. To see our pure-hearted intentions also, to see our good side, to allow that compassion to pour through, to forgive ourselves for not being perfect or not being what we'd like to have been, you know. And then we can forgive other people also. And that's part of turning a stream of compassion within, to forgive other beings, no matter what has happened. To learn to forgive ourselves, to forgive them, helps us to accept ourselves, to accept others, and to clean it all up with that water. Just letting it pour through and wash everything. This world is called the world of patient endurance. It's not easy for anyone. Life is hard for beings. And if we really knew what it was like for another person, there was no way we could judge them. You would have to have compassion. It's because we don't know, because we're not that person, we don't know what it's like to be that person, and we really can't, no matter how close we may be, we don't know what it's like to see through their eyes. And all we can do is have compassion and see that. Yes, everybody makes mistakes, everybody, including us, including others. Everybody messes up sometimes. Everybody has faults and imperfections. And we all have that pure nature also. To see that as well. If we could look at ourselves as we might see another person, we might have more compassion. If somebody else told me my story as though it was theirs, I might think, oh, poor thing, it's all right. You know, rather than, oh, how could you be so awful? You know, you're a dreadful person. You didn't do it perfectly. How could you? So if we can have compassion for somebody else, maybe we can have compassion for ourselves also. Sometimes it just seems easier to be kinder to another person than to ourselves. So maybe if you can find compassion for others, we can find compassion for ourselves, and vice versa. Because everybody needs compassion, no matter who we are, what we look like, what we think we are, or think we ought to be. Everybody needs compassion. Compassion for each other, compassion for ourselves, compassion for those we don't know, compassion for those who do abominable things that we cannot understand. Anyone could do that. We don't know what it's like to be them, what situation people are in, you know. The water of compassion flows throughout the whole world. It is for us. It is for us and for all beings. It flows through us, around everything, through the whole world. Avalokiteshvara is all over the place. Sometimes she has a vase, sometimes she doesn't. Sometimes she's riding on a dragon, sometimes she's sitting with children. All these different manifestations, these different aspects, point to compassion in all situations, no matter what is going on. There is compassion that can be found. Avalokiteshvara does not judge. She appears everywhere. She helps all beings. She doesn't discriminate. She just pours and pours and pours. May it pour through us too. It's water of compassion. And that's our talk for today.